Subscribe to Simply Bitcoin.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome in. It's another episode of the Meme Factory podcast. This evening, we are joined by James Lavish on our, what is this, test stream number 39. Did I just hear horns? Yeah, do it again. Hit him with the horns. That is weak. That was pretty bad. All right, we'll have to get Optimist on here to do the horns properly for us. Now, in the meantime, James has kind of exploded onto the Bitcoin scene in recent memory. James, could you tell us a little bit about who you are and what your background is that kind of led you to Bitcoin? It's my absolute pleasure. Hold on a second. I can fix it. Hang on. And now we're fixed. I was given... it's not true. I don't do it every time. But, Exactly. Things happen... Things just work out real well when you join the Meme Factory. Ask Becca. James... Well, I don't think they heard anything, so I'm telling everybody, welcome in. It's another episode of the Meme Factory podcast. This is test stream number 39. Anybody who watches this consistently will know there will never be a real stream. We'll only do test streams. This evening, we are graced by the presence of James Lavish, who I signed a potato for at the Bitcoin conference. It took a lot out of me, but I'm glad he enjoyed it. James, you are pretty recent onto the Bitcoin scene. Could you give us an idea of who you are and how you got here? Nobody can hear anybody but Greg. Oh, this is going terribly. Let's see. Well, I don't know. The Zoom audio input is showing good. The audio output capture is showing good. This is what we usually run with. The only thing I changed, I switched back. And they still can't hear us because there is a delay. You waited through the delay? Damn. You know, it might be the problem. I might need to update the grinder. Let's see.
All right. This is live too, James. So this is great.
Yeah, this is live. So when I fuck up here, everybody gets to see it.
It's a part of the pod. We even put it in the RSS stream.
Is they can only hear Greg right now talking to us.
Yep. I would type my responses, but that's just not going
to
happen.
No, that would never be. Wouldn't be fair to you. Wouldn't be fair to.
Did you see the new Top Gun at all?
I'm not.
Oh well, there's a part when he can't speak, so he types his stuff.
No pressure.
They can hear.
Are we going to test?
They can hear now.
Yeah, it's. Are we going to test?
All right. Thank God. This is a test stream. James.
Okay, guys. James was about to introduce himself. So
he hasn't introduced himself yet.
Not yet.
He's going.
You guys are
times up.
Hopefully, third time works.
Okay. So, who am I? I've been an institutional investor for over a quarter of a century.
Which is 50 years, right?
Yeah. That's 125 years.
Okay.
For those good with math. So. So how did I get into the, how to get into Bitcoin? I stumbled upon cryptocurrency, hold on, through my son who's in college, and he implored me to look back into Bitcoin and in Ethereum in particular, because I had kind of dismissed them back in my institutional investing days. I did what you typically do when you're an institutional investor. I wanted to go out on the risk curve a little bit and find something that I could put some discretionary capital in and take a little bit more risk. And I looked at Bitcoin. I thought about it. I did what you normally do in institutional investing. I went and talked to the people who are experts in technology investing, and they immediately told me that it's a Ponzi scheme. It's worth nothing. Get away from it. Don't do it. It's a scam. And so I dismissed it. Flash forward a few years, and 2021, my son implored me to look back at the space, and I did. And he convinced me to buy a little bit of Ethereum, and I bought some, and I started doing research. And it took me literally 3 days to figure out that that's not where I wanted to be. I wanted to have everything in Bitcoin. So I put all my attention on the Bitcoin, and I just joined Twitter in late summer and started really posting and talking to people maybe in September, October. And that's how I've met all of you guys, is just in that space. It's just unbelievable how much intelligence is in the Bitcoin ecosystem. And I'm just thrilled to be here. So
even when you include us.
We're thrilled to have you, man. You're all welcome. In the end, everybody joins.
In the end, they do.
Whether or not they want to, right? They're coming.
Yeah, they're coming.
That's how I feel. That's right.
Is your son still a shitcoin, are they?
He's actually been in the process of selling everything to go into Bitcoin recently. So,
oh, nice.
We're converting him. It's hard for a 21-year-old, you know? That's hard.
Would you say he's transitioning?
did you think he had lost him for a while?
He's Pedro, in Texas. I'm not too. Pedro, he's in Texas. I'm not too worried.
take it easy. I got it.
All right. So we still have some responsibilities to take care of before we get into the meat of this interview. In order for us to get paid, our sponsors require that the guests read the ad copy for the week. So when you get a moment, if you could read the ad copy for us for this week, sir.
Sure. Hi, my name is James Lavish, and this episode of the Meme Factory podcast is brought to you by Risk Management. Risk is all around us, but not everyone sees it or uses it appropriately. Do you pride yourself on investing in blue chip U.S. stocks like Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, Enron, and WorldCom? Are you positive that naked shorting GameStop will provide risk-free returns? Were you stoked to see rates rising and thought it was a great time to start that hedge fund? Those blue chips are sitting on assets so toxic, the spreads look like they're right out of the red light district. Arbitrage those blue chips with some credit default swaps so they don't smash your position on the way down. If you're going to get naked with GameStop, then you should really get to know who her previous partners were. Chances are, Melvin and some sort of contagion to spread. It was a bad time to start your hedge fund. You shouldn't have done that. You definitely shouldn't have doubled or tripled down and spent 20 hours plus a week fighting the tape. I forget the point that I was trying to make, but the point is that no one sees risk coming. And one of the best things about risk is that it happens to you whether you want it to or not. So take on some risk today, but do it on your terms and manage it properly with Risk Management. If I ever get another job, you can use discount code BLOWOUT for 85% off your ACL. I mean, 85% off your management fees.
Hey.
We're getting paid this week.
All right, so that I wanted to pop this off with a quote from Greg Foss when he was talking about you. You know, he's Canadian. He's big on hockey. Greg has called you, and I quote, "Not any good at hockey, and the best thing to never happen to the NHL."
I appreciate Greg. You know, his brain is it's little. It's small. It's like a pea.
Yeah.
Chiclet. Yeah.
Tell us more.
But, tell us more. Go in on Greg.
Greg tells him to take it easy too.
No. Go more.
Yeah. Greg is 50% smarter than he thinks he is. So
Too smart by half.
He overthinks by half, right?
Yeah.
All right, so you...
Oh, hi, Rusty.
Hey, Rusty, do you have a question?
Hi.
I think Rusty might have a question, Greg. Not sure.
Yeah,
Rusty, if you've got a question, you can go ahead and feel free to fire it off. Right,
that
now
would be a good time.
I appreciate it. It's Rusty here. So I had a question. Since we're talking about Greg Foss, he's been, I heard somewhere, I don't know if you guys have heard, but he's been trading risk for over 30 years. How many more years have you been trading risk than Greg Foss?
Ooh. How many more years? I've been trading risk approximately negative 5 more years than Greg.
What is that in American units?
You mean Canadian?
Whatever.
About negative 7.
Okay. Yeah. Like the ECB bonds. Negative,
with an apology at the end of it.
Yeah.
All right.
With an apology.
So you are currently in the middle of a transition. You're moving from somewhere in Texas out to Vegas. You made it out to Vegas okay?
I did. So my story is I lived in Texas for about 20 years. And when I went back and forth between Las Vegas and Texas for about 10 years. My wife is born and raised here in Las Vegas. And when the lockdown happened, we got locked down in separate cities for 100 days. So Eventually I just packed up my car. My youngest, my daughter, she went off to college. I packed up the car, drove out here, and I never went back. So, and that's why I unwound from that firm. I was the COO of a private equity hedge fund unit within a large investment firm in Fort Worth. And I just unwound from there and stayed here. So, and now I just, you know, screw around with you guys all day, pretty much. I'm self-unemployed.
I was going to say, it begs the question, how do you go from hedge fund COO to photographer and then make your way into Bitcoin? Yeah. Like, what is that?
So the thing is, when I was in the hedge fund world, I would take vacations and I started taking photos out in Cuba back in 2016. And I started, you know, really liking the travel part of it. So I went to Iceland with a bunch of surfers from California, and we went, you know, took photos of them surfing in the Arctic in December. That was wild. And then I went out to Greenland and sailed the Disco Bay midnight in Disco Bay with a Russian sailboat, and then I went out to Dubai with a fashion photographer. I mean, I was having so much fun just traveling and doing photography that when I came out here when lockdown happened, I had so much time on my hands that I was transitioning out of the hedge fund. I was just having fun doing photography. I started my photography channel just to start teaching people, you know, because photography it sounds easy. You just grab your phone and you take photos. But invariably, somebody would come up to me and say, "Hey, do you have a special iPhone or something? Because your photos look so much different than mine." And so I just started teaching people how to take proper photos, and that kind of blew up. And so, you saw my YouTube channel, and I loved doing it. You know, what's that?
It looked like you stopped making videos like a year ago, but they all have like a boatload of views. You had some 40,000, 2,000, like a bunch of thousands of views on them.
Yeah. I had one that really blew up. It like had over, I don't know, maybe a quarter of a million views or something. It was crazy. So, but you know, basically what I did is I just came out here. I started taking photos of models and some corporate stuff. And I just got some gigs and I started, you know, getting paid for it. And I realized pretty quickly, I was like, I don't want to do time for money. Like, that's not where I can leverage off my knowledge, but this is fun, but I want to keep it for myself. I want to keep that for my, you know, my interest. And that's my outlet to just go out. So I've got a tent on top of my car. I can just go out to the desert or the woods and just, you know, bug out for a few days and just get away from society. And so I like doing that and taking photos or whatever. And so I want to keep that myself. Anyways, so then, you know, but I really liked doing the teaching. I like teaching people about something that seems so complicated, but it shouldn't be. It's not really that complicated. And so I started that newsletter, the Informationist newsletter, and back in, I want to say November or December. And I've loved just teaching people the complicated concepts of Wall Street, because, or investing, or macro concepts, or the Fed, or, you know, you guys have seen some of it. So often I post something and I realize, well, hold on, I've got to dial that back a bit, because it's so easy just to start talking in acronyms or start talking in concepts that I get. I just start saying, well, we're going to see yield curve control in the next year or something. And then people are like, well, what the hell is that? And I realize that if I say, well, the Fed's going to come out and they're going to hold rates at a certain, you know, at a certain price point. And they go, what the hell are you talking about? So I realize I have to dial all the way back. And, you know, one of the things that my wife says this, and people around me have told me this for a long time, and especially in my business where I was trading arbitrage, super complicated concepts. I would teach people how to do it and boil something super complicated down to simple, like really simple for anybody to understand. So that's what I like to do. And that's why I'm doing that. And that's why I'm doing the Looking Glass, that educational platform with Greg and some of the other guys that you've met out in Miami, I think, you know, Seb Bunny and Daz Bia. I think you met Jason Sansoni, and we've got Dahlia Platt on there now. So
Looking Glass, for anybody who doesn't know what it is it's a Bitcoin learning platform, right? It's basically one course with a couple of modules, teaches you basics in economics.
Yeah. And so I got kind of pulled into that by Greg Foss. And, you know, because what they were doing is I didn't create this. These young guys, Seb Bunny and Daz Bia and Jason Sansoni, really dug in, and those guys set up the platform. And what they did is they created this course, and it's like modules, and you can step through it. And the further you go, it kind of builds on itself. Like, what is money? How is money used? How has it evolved? You know, all that. And it builds all the way into the problems we have with our system now. And eventually we don't tell you, and Bitcoin's the answer. Like, we let you realize that, oh my God, Bitcoin is absolutely the answer. And we show you, like, kind of going through the rabbit hole, all the way deep down the rabbit hole, how that is the obvious and logical conclusion. So, and my contribution is really in my newsletter and those deep dives of getting these particular concepts. Like, Greg does this stuff of, you know, Bitcoin as a CDS.
Yeah, he does against the chiclet brain stuff.
Yeah, the chiclet brain stuff. That stuff that a really, really tiny brain that, you know, like if you were a grasshopper and your brain was like that. So
like a small pea instead of a capital P.
Like a dehydrated. Like if I had a pea here in Vegas and I left it on the counter for a few days, it would dehydrate down to
and nobody would notice.
You're talking more along the lines of something that's almost just a nervous system, not even the full developed brain.
Yes, it's like it's not really fully developed.
That's it's just fair. An autonomic response to external stimuli.
Yeah, just that simple 11th grade math, really. Yeah.
It sounds like you guys are working on like another way to orange pill. I mean, everybody responds to that in a different way, and some people might need a course.
Yeah, and that was the thing, is that, you know, what I felt like, okay, so how I got orange pilled is I just started watching videos and following people on Twitter and reading the Bitcoin Standard, reading Hard Money You Can't Fuck With, you know, like, and I just started getting my head around what Bitcoin actually is and how it's different from cryptocurrency, right? And how I got orange pilled was I was watching a podcast, and it was with Jeff Booth and it was with Pomp. And I sat down on the edge of my bed and had my laptop, and I was watching that, and I paused it about two thirds of the way through. I pulled my wife in. I said, you've got to listen to this. It's crazy. We sat down on the edge of the bed, and I rewound it, watched the whole thing again. And at the end of it, she looked at me and she was like, how much Bitcoin do we own? Do we have enough?
Not enough. So, that's always.
And I said, no, honey, we'll never have enough. So, yeah. And but anyways, what I realized is I'd spent weeks and weeks and weeks just trying to piece it together myself. And I knew, you know, all the money concepts that we were teaching. I already knew that stuff. But to put it all together for somebody and to distill it down into something that makes sense, that was our goal, is to make it super easy for you to say, okay, hey, listen, my sister she's in graphics, and I really want her to understand what Bitcoin is and why it's so important. You know, she doesn't have any financial training, but she's smart enough to get it. Well, just send her there and boom, 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 boom. And, you know, you can go at your own pace. You can do two modules in a day or all of them. You can binge them like Netflix, whatever. And then at the end of it, you can start going into the deep dives and then refer back to kind of the material to get that reference point of where those deep dives come from, those concepts, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. I think James. Oh, go ahead. Yo.
Okay. Yeah. James, does the bear market, so-called bear market, has any impact in your enthusiasm about Bitcoin and all the space? Like, and if so, how are you handling it? Are you doubling down in your work, or?
I love it. I think it's great because it's washing out a lot of the nonsense that we're seeing. I mean, the Luna collapse was just, it's awful. I mean, it is awful. And I hate that people lost their life savings. I'm not joking around with this. This is brutal.
Correct. So they also lost their lives.
Yep.
And some lives. That's right. And so, you know, I think it's great to just wash out some of this and avoid more of that. And I feel like Bitcoin is just swallowing a lot of that, you know, energy and that nonsense. People, they want a different way to invest. They're looking for it. And you're not going to get it in the stock market right now. You can't, like the GameStop stuff. I mean, we're joking around with your thing. It's like you're just not going to be able to make money on the meme stocks right now. It's just not possible. It's easy when the market's going straight up to get bamboozled into garbage, right? But when you start having these sell-offs and these troughs, and that's where that's literally where you see the tide goes out, who's wearing shorts. And that's what we're seeing right now. And so for me, I'm enthusiastic. I don't care that Bitcoin's down 50%. It doesn't matter. This is such a short time period. If you really truly understand what it is, this is nothing. Your time preference is so elongated that you just don't care. So that's what I think we're winning people over to that. You know?
Yeah, you had a thread yesterday about it. I think you said check the fundamentals. Are they the same? Yeah. No, they're better.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I can't believe
exactly.
You're ignoring Rusty, Greg.
Hi, Rusty.
Who?
Rusty.
Hi, Rusty.
Rusty. He's in the. So when he does that, he goes automatically into the far left corner. Oh, okay.
I see him. Go ahead, Rusty. What you got, buddy?
Yeah, well, we're talking about the bear market, and I've heard James talk about this before, about how the price goes down because institutions, in inverted commas, are selling to hedge because they know the market's going down, so they know they can short Bitcoin because it's tied, and they sell, and therefore it pushes the price down. So I've heard you talk about that concept before. But does it become some point where these institutions, first of all, who are these institutions we're talking about that are doing this? And then second, does it just end when they just get completely wrecked? Where like you have a GameStop moment where, and then if they do get wrecked, does someone just come and bail them out? How does that dynamic work?
Yeah. That's a good question. So, well, let me break that apart. That's a lot of questions, but let me break it up for you and start back at the beginning. You know, if you look back at and I just did a newsletter on this, it's all about the Fed put and quantitative easing and how that really works and why they do it. Well, the where it really started is in 87. And that was kind of like it just 1987, Greenspan came in and he gave the market a little bit of a backstop and a nudge, right? He injected liquidity into the market. So that's where it kind of started. Where it really took off was back in 1998. Now, I don't know if any of you guys were in the market back in 1998, but we had this situation where there was a hedge fund called Long-Term Capital Management, LTCM. And they were run by, a couple of
cowboys.
No, they won the Nobel Prize for option pricing models. Yeah, Black-Scholes. So, and it was Martin Scholes who was in the fund. Well, they were so arrogant and so, their egos were so big that they took not just 10 to like, not 2-to-1 leverage or 10-to-1 leverage. They took like 100-to-1 leverage on $1 billion. They had $100 billion of positions, and the way they were positioned is they were short volatility because they were playing these interest rate arbitrage trades, right? And if the spreads went out, it's volatility, right? And the spreads just had to blow out just a little bit for them to lose a lot of money. Well, people started getting wind that they had these positions, and the Russians they devalued the ruble. Certain spreads went out, and these guys got absolutely obliterated. And they went to the New York Fed and they begged, and they said, you know, they basically said, look, it was actually a prime broker that went to the Fed, the New York Fed, and said, if you don't bail these guys out, we'll collapse. And it was a major investment bank where it all started. Okay, so going to your question, what do I see in where we are now and how that might play out now? I mean, look, there's no way around it. We are going to have some sort of backstop at some point because we have so much debt in our system. We our GDP can't grow as fast as our debt can because the interest rates are going to, they just won't allow us to, you know, to we have to inflate away that debt. There's just no way for us to keep up with that interest rate, right? Because as the debt grows at a certain interest rate, say it's an average of 3%, and it's 1.25, 1.3 times, and our current GDP has to grow at, you know, 1.5 times of what it is now. And if you look at the global GDP to global debt, it's like 3 or 4 to 1. So if you look at the whole system, there's just no way that we can get out of this without inflation. We have to allow inflation to keep going. So that was part of your question. What was the other part?
When his hand is down, he can't talk.
Probably something about kangaroos.
So who are the institutions that are shorting
Bitcoin?
Shorting Bitcoin or selling?
It's shorting. So okay. He's heard about me say this before. Okay, so why is Bitcoin correlated to the Qs, the NASDAQ, and to risk on assets? Well, one of the major problems is, first, institutions don't really fully understand it broadly, right? They put it in the same, they put Bitcoin in the same bucket as Ethereum and Solana and Cardano, you know, like it's all the same to a lot of them, truly, you know, they just don't understand it yet. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is you have hedge funds who they have portfolios of assets that are risk on assets, and they're using Bitcoin as a quasi hedge against it. So they know that Bitcoin is a leading risk indicator. It has been for a while. So if the Qs are going to sell off, Bitcoin sells off first, and then the Qs sell off behind it. And Bitcoin will usually sell off a little bit more in percentage terms than the Qs or the S&P. So what they're doing is they're using that as a hedge against their portfolio. It's sloppy. It's not right, but they're doing it. And so that's just the reality, okay? Though it's major hedge funds that are doing, it's not pension funds, it's not ERISA, it's not it's the guys who, it's not 401ks, it's the guys who can short in size and can, you know, really lever up to do it. So that's number one. When does it decouple? When does it become uncorrelated? And do those guys have to get wiped out? And will they get saved? That was your other question, right? So number one, you know, the way that it becomes uncorrelated is when institutions understand the asset, really truly understand how Bitcoin is different from everything else. That's number one. And not just understand it broadly, but deeply, but broadly. So a lot of them understand it. Okay, so where are we now in this? Well, if you look at our system, you know, out of the 730 trillion dollars of assets, there are five firms that control $30 trillion of that, right? You've got BlackRock, you've got Vanguard, you've got Fidelity, State Street, Morgan Stanley. They control over $30 trillion, right? Okay, so you know Fidelity is getting deep into Bitcoin. They're starting to really understand it. So that's number one. That's really good. And BlackRock, they understand it. They just haven't really pushed too far forward with Bitcoin yet, because they see, you know, I think they see a higher beta in some of the other stuff, and they're still playing that game.
What does that mean?
Whatever. The higher beta, meaning that it's more sensitive to risk on moves, right? So they can play that move. So, but when you start getting, you know, BlackRock, State Street, Morgan Stanley, and when they dedicate a certain portion of their portfolio to Bitcoin as a separate asset, to a completely separate asset class, well, what do you think all the other asset managers in the world are going to do? I mean, this is $30 trillion worth of capital here. This is not going to be a small, you know, bite. This is going to be meaningful to Bitcoin. Bitcoin could double, triple in you know, very quickly off of this.
Like
so,
in an hour, or
yeah, maybe 20 minutes.
On that, James, if I may, because it's like a question I had to ask you. You were a part of a fund. So you guys have your models, you do your research, and accordingly you do the investment. But in the end, how much part does it play in your decision making what the bigger guy is doing? Like, in the end, in this market, is it like a theater of like mimicking each other?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've seen that in hedge funds in particular. It's been very difficult for you to stand out as a hedge fund, because these guys are climbing all over each other on the same plays, the same positions, the same trades, mm-hmm. you know? So we have seen that before. They all become correlated, and it's difficult. You've seen how difficult it is for hedge funds in particular to make money recently. So yes, they do climb all over each other, but I'm talking more on the institutional asset management side. So hedge funds are not like Fidelity and BlackRock. I mean, BlackRock has hedge funds, but you know, these guys, they have so much money under management that when you start getting those guys doing it, anybody who's managing money institutionally is going to have to sit up and take notice. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, part of the problem is, and you guys may have heard me talk about this before, is it takes a long time to get through that process to be able to buy Bitcoin as a separate asset class within these institutions. Why is that? Well, because it's not a regulated asset yet. You know, it's not, the clarity on it is so vague that they can't really dig into it yet. So we need a little bit of regulatory clarity, number one. Okay. Then number two, what we need is for these large asset managers to dig in and have a champion within the firm to bring it all the way home. So if you have a portfolio manager that likes this, that understands it, he's read the Bitcoin standard, he's read you know, the price of tomorrow, he's following Jeff Booth, he's watching people on Twitter, and he gets it. Well, that's great, but he still has to get buy-in from his investment, his chief investment officer, number one. Then they've got to get buy-in. If he gets him to buy in, then they've got to sit in front of a table, a boardroom of people in the investment committee, and get them to agree that yes, they should start buying it. Then they've got to bring in the general counsel and get approval that they can start buying it. Then they've got to sit in front of the compliance committee and talk about what they need to do to implement this strategy and to have it as a separate asset class. Then they've got to decide all these things like, number one, who's going to trade it? Who's going to settle it? Where are they going to hold it? Like, who's going to custody it? It's not like a prime broker who custodies all of your stock and bond assets. Like, where are you going to keep this? And do you feel comfortable for your investors that whoever's holding it is, you know, the risk is low enough that you are abiding by your fiduciary duty, right? And then you have little things like, well, where do you even mark it? You know, because you have to mark to market every single night your portfolios. Well, Bitcoin doesn't ever close. Do you market at midnight in London? Do you market the New York Stock Exchange close time? Like, where do you actually market, you know? So these are all the things they have to go through. And this doesn't take days. This doesn't take weeks. This takes months. And it could take over a year. So all those things have to happen. But I can tell you that from conversations I'm having with people who are in the institutional money management business, who are in the institutional operational side, there are a lot of institutions that are sniffing around trying to figure out how to do this. And the two that they're always talking about is Bitcoin and Ethereum. And once they understand how Bitcoin is totally different and Ethereum goes off to, you know, proof of stake, whenever that happens, you know, once they truly do understand that.
I think it's 6 months out.
It's always 6 months.
Like usual.
It's, yeah. Anyways, so that's consistent. And when that, and when that happens and you get a few of these guys to take positions and they get a 1%, a 2%, a 3% position, the thing is, we talk about all the money that comes into the space, right? So the addressable market for Bitcoin as an investment, right? Just as an investment asset. If you look at all of the assets in the world, the global assets in the world, you've got about $120 trillion worth of stocks. This is in the fall, so it's a little bit off because of the market sell-off, but it's big enough, it doesn't matter. Just for round numbers, $120 trillion of stocks, $140 trillion worth of bonds, $300 trillion worth of real estate. You've got $30 trillion in art and collectibles, $10 trillion in gold. Not all of that is tradable, it's jewelry, but just for argument's sake, it's about $600 trillion. Then you've got about $130 trillion of cash and marketable cash securities, you know, your savings account, you know, your money market accounts, okay? So you've got $730 trillion worth of assets. Well, these guys come in, they start taking a 1% position, okay? Out of $730 trillion, that's $7 trillion, right? That's a $350,000 Bitcoin. Then you get a 2%, that's $700,000 Bitcoin. 3%, that's $1 million Bitcoin. And that's just talking about the money that goes into it. That's not talking about the appreciation of the asset because of what we call friction, which is entering that trade causes the price to move up. Yeah, without price. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I could go on there right now. If nobody was selling and I could buy one penny of Bitcoin, right, at $100,000, if nobody sold me anything in between, well, now, Bitcoin is 100,000 times 21 trillion or 21 million. And so, you know, 100,000 times 20, that suddenly you've raised that market cap by three times just with one penny. So there's
that's how the DeFi coins do it.
I think you've given
it. And then the founders are all at 100,000. Right. So, but you guys get,
you're gonna ruin it.
Yeah. So that's how it happens. And when that happens, though, what you do have is you have institutional investors who, it's not that they don't care what price they buy it at, it's that they need a certain percentage allocation. And so they just say, participate in the market and get me my allocation. If it's trading at 70,000, it's trading at 70,000. If it's trading at 30,000, it's at 30,000. If it's trading at 170,000, it's 170,000. Just go along, participate in the market, and buy what I need.
The obvious question now is, okay, so if all those problems are solved by the ETF, right? Like,
yeah.
Why isn't here now spot ETF, right? Because the future, it was like, except like I think the start that it had a little bit of volume, nothing after that, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, look, the futures ETF is problematic at best. I mean, it does is it gives another vehicle for hedge funds to.
What about at worst?
Short.
Give us the worst.
The worst?
Yeah, you said at best. What's the worst of an ETF, a futures ETF?
The worst is that it's just holding down the price of Bitcoin. You know, because you just have the massive hedge funds who are just sitting on those futures. They could borrow them endlessly and short them forever. You know, it's just a paper trade. So that's the worst of it. The best is that it forces.
Raise your hand, Rusty.
I was tempted. I thought I could sneak it in. Does a spot ETF balance the futures ETF, or is it too late?
Not from Australia, it doesn't.
Does it balance it? Oh, I think it completely outweighs it. I think once a spot ETF comes, you have, so it's not the the State Streets, it's not the, you know, the CalPERS, you know, Texas Teachers. It's not those guys aren't the ones who are going to be buying the ETF. Although it's an easy way to step in to get a percentage allocation while they're trying to get all the approvals that I talked about. But the ones who are going to be buying it are those people who want to own it in their IRA, you know, the people who are RIAs, registered investment advisor, who don't have the infrastructure and the back office and compliance to deal with all the things I just talked about for individual clients. You know, it's much easier for them to just go out and buy the ETF. And if it's actually spot settled with an underlying asset that it's tied to, that's much easier for them.
Not only that, but imagine what happens in the psychology aspect of the market, like seeing all those thousands of coins leaving the market and going to custody and just sitting there out of the market forever or for a long period of time.
Yeah. And then you've got the GBTC situation, right? So, and if that becomes the ETF, that's a pretty quick move in that asset. So I'm bullish that it will happen. I'm not bullish it'll happen this year. I don't think it will. Not in the bear market, not with, you know, the Fed focused on inflation and the SEC fumbling around right now. And I don't know exactly what the situation is. I don't know why they're holding off. It is absolutely political in some way. I don't know if it's the banks. I don't know if, you know, I mean, Jamie Dimon has a lot of power, you know, and he may be chirping in their ear saying, look, you guys, all you have is downside to this right now if you approve this. Because if something happens and one of these exchanges is manipulated and your ETF blows up in your face, I mean, there's just no upside for them. And that, so you have to go back to, what are the incentives? Well, do they have a real incentive right now? Not yet. When enough people are absolutely pounding the table saying, we need this now, that's when they'll do it.
So are you implying that a major problem they're facing, I guess for them, it's like the ticker? They need a more credible ticker of like what the price is and not based on those exchanges in Singapore and I don't know, whatever country they're based.
Yeah, and that is a question. Like, what exchanges are they going to base it off of? You know, I mean, it will be a composite, right? So, I don't know how they conclude that. I don't. I'm not close enough to it.
You mentioned something a few minutes ago about that event in 1998 where some powerful people, right?
Yeah, long-term capital management. Yeah,
that had introduced a lot of risk that could result in some contagion, came begging for money. And that was like foretold in The Creature from Jekyll Island, in a book that was written 4 years before that event. I'm curious, like, there's been a number of events leading up or since then, up until the COVID thing, where at that point, nobody came begging for money. The government just sort of started helicoptering it into to the environment. That's like, they didn't even foretell that. I don't remember reading that in The Creature from Jekyll Island, where the government was just going to voluntarily just start dropping money in. And we're still in this situation right now. Like, what is the next level of that, of the government just voluntarily thrusting money into the economy?
Yeah, we were talking about this on Preston Pish's podcast last week, I think, and it was, the bottom line is, I don't think that this next cycle we get into QE infinity, but I do think in two or three cycles of this, things start to we could have things break in the next cycle. And, what happens is, once the bond market starts to break, and it won't be our bond market first, for the Americans here, we are unbelievably privileged here, like so severely overprivileged that we don't even understand how difficult it is for places like Venezuela, for Lebanon, and people who are, they have money in the bank that can just be seized. It can be turned into something else. It could be revalued, in an instant. So we're super, super lucky here. Now, that said, there will be currencies that break in this next cycle. They could even break in this cycle. I don't think they will yet, but there will be some that do break. Greg thinks that, Canada has the worst balance sheet and they're the ones who are going to break out of the G7. That's possible. Do I think it's going to happen this, in the next year or two? No. I'm sorry, Greg Foss.
Yeah, P-Break.
Greg is, yeah.
If I just want to add one thing into what Pedro was saying, like, how could it get worse? Or like, what's the next step? I think it'd be something like a debt jubilee, right? Like, that's what we're seeing with like $5.8 billion was just forgiven for student loans.
Nothing.
Colleges. So I think like a debt jubilee could be something.
So what happens is, that's the only solution they have, right? To inflation is to print more money and give it out to help the people who are getting hurt by all the money printing. It's absolutely moronic, but that's the only thing they can do, that is keep printing. And so, if we're going to get into a situation, I think that in this fall, we're going to have enough of an economic downturn that they're going to tap the brakes. Okay. And they're going to have to swallow a higher inflation rate. So instead of saying that, inflation should be 2 to 3% or 2.5 to 3%, they're going to say it's got to be somewhere between 4 and 5%. And it's just what it is. And they're going to have to accept it. And that really sucks for the people who do not have savings and investments. If you don't have savings and investments and the inflation rate is 4 or 5%, it's eating away at your earning power, your savings every single year. And you're unless you're making more money every year, you're getting obliterated by it. But anyway, so that's what I think happens is this cycle, is that we skid out, we don't crash, but it's not a soft landing. it's not going to be. I think it could get hairy here. Truly,
do I? Excellent question. Before Rusty, question. Hello, James. We all see in the States that they're trying to ban weapons and Bitcoin is a weapon. So what's your opinion on that? Thank you. I'm from MIT.
I don't have opinion on Bitcoin as a weapon.
Also, go ahead.
I feel like it's a defense.
I was going to say, we're talking about other economies crashing first. I'm from Australia, so third world country here. So do I have an advantage being on the Bitcoin standard over someone in the US if my currency is going to collapse first?
No, you send me your Bitcoins to me, okay?
Right.
No
advantage. And Yellow will send double.
Yeah,
that's a good question. I mean, like, you you have your Bitcoin denominated in Aussies, right? So as that currency devalues, you do, but if everything ends up being milkshaked into the US dollar, then you're on the same standard. It doesn't matter. Do I think that's going to happen eventually in my lifetime? I don't know. I mean, in the next 20, 25 years, it's definitely possible.
You are such These things take a long time.
You're a giant.
Okay, I got a question for you.
No, because I want to pick a fight with him.
All right.
Yeah, well, please.
First of all, James, you're there. So. Second of all, okay, before Greg picks his fight, you're talking about like how all these, like the process that it takes for these hedge funds to figure it out, to figure out what Bitcoin is. And you got like these memers right here, us, right?
Like, you don't have to like us.
We've quote unquote figured it out a little bit, you know. Why does it take these hedge funds? Like, you explain why, but like,
because the system has benefited them all this time.
Yeah.
These people are so rich, guys. They have made so much money. They have made ungodly amounts of money. You know, think about the people who made all that money who were in Bitcoin back in 2011. And how much money they have. That's what kind of money these guys are making in this world. You know, they have made crazy amounts of money. It's benefited them. Why would they want to change? Why would they open their mind to anything else? Why would they do anything but try to, you know, fence guard their current system? That's
winning game. You don't change a winning game.
Do you think that we live in a society that's based off of
living in a society.
You didn't tell me it was going to be so serious. I thought that we were going to screw around a little bit.
Well, yeah. I'm just wondering, because every time I talk, I go to a party, right? If I go to a party, people talk to me about Bitcoin.
Are you usually invited, or do you crash parties? Do you crash?
How do you find these parties, Sean?
I just tell people I'm Pedro. So I'm.
You swipe right. Okay, so
do you think people are just like, they just read a headline and that's all that they do? Like they just read the headline. Yeah. They never read articles, and that's all. I mean, they have.
Well, yeah, but even if they do read the articles, have you read the Bloomberg articles recently? I mean, about the Bitcoin mining, and I mean, like,
yes.
I mean, come on, like, there's no mainstream media outlet is writing anything that is fully truthful. On Bitcoin, none. I've not seen any, if you guys have seen anything, you tell me, but I have not seen anything that has been fully truthful.
Only Bob Malakas.
Oh yeah, only Bob Malakas.
Yep.
So that's the problem, is that they're not gonna pick up the Bitcoin magazine.
No, James, that's not the problem. You're the problem.
Oh,
you're the problem. You're the problem because I've seen you now say a few times that there will be 12 or so currencies when Bitcoin is the base layer of money. That's the fight I'm picking with you. How is that happening?
I said that.
Before you go to the fight.
No, the fight's here. Fight's here.
Do you have the sun right next to your face? What is happening now?
No, my son's in the other room.
No, the sun.
No, yeah, the sun's in the other room.
They're both in the other room.
So how does this happen? Well, I think Bitcoin actually, it becomes the base asset, you know?
Right, but in that environment that you described, Bitcoin's the base asset, but people are still transacting in dollars and euros.
I think it's going to happen for a while. You know, it's going to take a long time for people to move out of this current system into another one. And I mean, look at what happened with Russia, you know, the last few months. It happened, you know, we're suddenly realizing that, you know, it's important to have your currency backed by something. And suddenly people are realizing that, yeah, Russia has a lot of oil and gas. Oh, and they have fertilizer. I mean, they can demand to be paid in rubles. And there's little that a lot of people can do about it. So I think that, you know, you've got Russia, you've got either it's going to be like a combination of the ruble and yuan, or, you know, a few other currencies possibly, but I think the dollar survives for a long time. And honestly, I think that's a good thing, because you don't want to go from one system to another in a jump. You know, I don't know if you've ever tried to change over operating systems in a business. And if you did that, you know, and you had all your inventory priced in one thing, and you had all your settlements priced in one thing, and then that you just switch over one night, and God, I mean, that would be a nightmare. What you do is you run the operating systems in parallel for a while, and then you switch over. And I think that if we do that, I think a lot fewer people would be hurt. And so, I mean, that's what I'm hoping for anyways.
So I just misunderstood your position. Your position is that these 12 fiats will exist for a while until Bitcoin really takes them out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know if that happens in my lifetime, because I'm, you know, apparently three times as old as you.
Yeah, you're like 93, right?
You know, yeah, 94 and a half. And okay. So, you know, but if that, you know, I do think it happens eventually. I do. It's just
Greg's just mad because he was invested into USDT and that was supposedly backed by Bitcoin. No, it
wasn't. Don't even say shit like that. All right, so USD. we're coming towards the end of our hour, and you've been very generous.
First of all, Becca, are our sandwich ready? What happened? What is going on? Sandwiches.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the bread to come out of the oven. Maybe okay. Another 15 minutes.
Okay.
We don't have 15 minutes, Becca.
It's fine. We got a moment.
It's a little slow time. I'm taking care of Labra, so he's taking up.
I can hear that.
Is he the one barking?
Yeah. He's pooing on Becca's table right now. She's got to clean that up first.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, got to follow.
Oh, Labra is Amber Hart. I didn't know that.
before we go to RD's question, Greg, I think Yellow has one question he needs to sneak in before we move.
No. It's not. It's yours now.
Oh. James, do you go by James or Jim?
James. Never gone by Jim. Yeah.
Are there any other rabbit holes that you've gone down?
You mean in cryptocurrencies?
No, just in general.
In general. Sure. I went down a photography rabbit hole. That was fun. But, I'm the kind of guy who likes to truly understand what the hell I'm getting into. So I think that I'm only about a hundredth of the way down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. So I've got a lot further to go. You guys understand so much more. You've been around this space for so much longer. I can bring my lens a little bit, but man, I've got a long way to go. And if there's a rabbit hole, I should go down. Tell me. Huh?
You never reach the bottom.
No.
The Bitcoin rabbit hole.
Before RD gets to his question, I had another question. I just wanted to make sure, because we do have a small audience. It's not big, but maybe some of them are actually influential. Are you still unemployed, James? Or
I'm self-unemployed. Yeah, I mean, I'm deciding what to do. There's a few things I'm working on.
I know Simply Bitcoin's in the chat, so if you're looking for a job as like a talking head somewhere,
thank you.
They might be able to use you. Thank you.
So I'm open to talking about anything. You know, I would probably use my skill set, what I've done all these years, but I want to stay in the Bitcoin ecosystem. I want to be in here. So if I'm going to be investing, I'm going to be doing something like that, it's going to be here. So, but
awesome, man.
We'll see.
All right, I'm going to hand this over to RD with the most important question of the night.
Oh, boy.
Thanks for coming on, James. This is the important question.
Sure.
If the meme factory did exist, and we all know it doesn't, which one of us would you like? Which one of us would you retweet? And which one of us would you mute?
Oh, man. Well, I got to mute Greg after picking a fight with me. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, dude.
He's in high school.
You get the lumber.
What's that?
You get the lumber.
Yeah, yeah. Yellow gets a like because he asked me some great questions, and Rusty gets a retweet. You know, and nice. That one question that had like five parts to it, that's a retweet because you get a lot of parts there, right?
So
you want to have that long.
We didn't get to the end of those questions, by the way. There's still two left, but that's cool. Next one.
He's trying to do a micro chat right now. He's trying to pull a micro chat.
If it was a micro chat, it would be 30 minutes of story and then maybe a question.
Yeah. Sean, I want to follow just because I want to know more about basketball, man. I don't know enough about basketball.
We have a new category already. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think, James, that Bitcoin is basketball?
Bitcoin is part of basketball? I mean, the other way around. Basketball is part of Bitcoin.
I love that. I just got
corrected. Right. That's
because,
great.
Because
it, had it right.
Because it swallows it all, right? It swallows it all.
Everything
needs to go down the basketball.
Hey, you know, Sean, how many NBA players are taking Bitcoin as part of their salary?
Right now.
Hey, Sean.
What?
How many NBA players do you think are taking Bitcoin as part of their salary?
Yeah, we asked the questions.
Yeah, we asked the
I don't know. Probably a few, actually. Klay Thompson, he just gave out some Bitcoin on Cash App a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And Andre Iguodala.
We're gonna try that orange pill the NHLPA. So
that's what I'm. I need to do that.
All right, I'll work on that. You gonna invite him?
That's my goal. Okay. By the way, James.
Sure.
In 2024, do you know what's coming up?
What up?
Bitcoin halving is coming up in 2024.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
And block height 840,000. And just in case anyone was wondering, I know you knew that already. And we're having a party. The Meme Factory is having a party.
Yes.
We're inviting everyone, all the guests that we brought on, awesome. Includes you.
All the chat.
Yep, all the chat.
All
bring your family, bring your friends.
Bye.
It's gonna be physical location.
I'm leaving.
And we don't know where yet. It might be at Greg's house.
Sweet.
Probably won't be, but you're invited. And tickets will start going out.
Is he done?
A year from now.
Tickets.
What's awesome. Up, tickets.
Wow. So you're invited. It's gonna be a blast, and you should come.
Thank you. I'd love to come. Thank you.
Harden Yellow, he's malakaming right now.
What the hell is going on with Yellow?
He's constantly malakaming.
I can't stand son.
All right, James, we're going to turn this over to you. It's the end of the show. If you have anywhere that you want people to find you, tell them. Any projects you're working on, tell them. Now's the time.
Did you just call him Jim?
Nope.
He said he doesn't go by Jim Greg. God
he goes by James.
I know damn he doesn't go Greg. By Jim Greg. He goes
he
by
James. He said
Jim. I didn't call him Jim Greg.
You did.
No, I didn't.
I had Jim.
I called him Jim earlier as an insult.
Don't worry. Yellow calls.
Recently, I just called him James.
Yellow calls him Craig instead of Greg.
Anyway. He's called him James. He doesn't call him Craig.
How would you feel if I start calling you Greg?
I would feel interesting.
Instead of Craig.
Yeah, Craig.
Thanks for being here, James.
You're not gonna let him talk?
Oh, he was going to share. You were going to share how people can find you.
First of all, thank you guys for having me on. This is a blast. I like your format. You can find me on Twitter, James Lavish on Twitter, and the platform that I helped set up the educational platform, Looking Glass, the Looking Glass EDU. It's on my Twitter profile. You can find it through there. If you have, if you want to just learn more about that, just right there. It's easy to get to. And then if you haven't subscribed to my newsletter and you want to get those concepts piecemeal, pretty simple. I mean, like super simplified every Sunday morning, you can also find that right there. But other than that, I just appreciate you guys having me on. And it's always good to have a little bit of conflict.
It was a pleasure, sir.
It's our pleasure. Everybody, thank you for coming out. We're going to play you out now with our Meme Factory graphic. Have a good night, everybody.